Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to the Peptide Summit. My name is Dr. Matt Cook, and I'm with my good friend, Dr. Suzanne Turner, and she's the founder of VMA Associates. She's an incredible doctor. I've known and met her at conferences and have found her to be one of the bright lights in medicine. And so because of that, we made a list of all the great doctors in the world that we wanted as a faculty, and she was at the top of the list. So she's a faculty for the International Peptide Academy, and everybody loves her. And so we're here to sit down and glean some wisdom and experience from her experience as a family medicine doctor that takes care of everything from very complex problems to the topic of our conversation today, enhancing the entrepreneur. So welcome, Matt. I'm delighted to have you, and thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Matt. It's great to see you.
Tell me about enhancing, tell me about peptides. Tell me how you got into it, how you've learned, and some just a little background experience, because I think you're a great resource for people to learn from on this topic.
Sure. So it was probably 5 years ago. I injured myself, my own hip, and had trouble getting back to, I was a runner, competitive runner, and had, maybe it's longer than that now. Anyway, had trouble getting back to activity, some sort of function, and was just looking for anything I could do. I'd gone through all kinds of different treatments and had really little success. So I started looking into options that were available. I happened to attend the annual meeting that A4M does and went to a peptide conference, and they were talking about mechanogrowth factor. So I started using mechanogrowth factor for the injury and was able to get back to activity, which was really great. That was a big turnaround for me. And so then what is this magical stuff that's out there, and what else is there that we can learn? You know, anytime we've all got patients that are sick, and we know they're sick, but all the things that we typically use aren't working for them. So we're always looking for what's the next thing we can bring to our practice to help our patients get better, especially some of the particularly sick ones that we have that just aren't responding to the typical things. So sort of for my own benefit, but also for them, I started going through the peptide certification course, and I did that through A4M. And then I got called to be on the faculty for them, which was awesome and very exciting and fun, and had a great time for several years doing that. I'm still on faculty with A4M teaching in their peptide certification. That's coming up. The part two is coming up the end of April.
Yeah, I'm going to be there with you.
Oh, good. Excellent. Yeah. That'll be fun. It'll be a good one. It looks like there's some really good talks in that one.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
You would be kind of like me, 50% interested in this for helping people, and then 50% interested in this because we like to exercise and train and do stuff. And so then we're bound to need a little help as we go through aging and getting older and trying to stay young. Tell me a little bit, how did you use that peptide to treat your hip, and then how do you like to use that? That maybe we'll just start with that one.
Sure. So this is the best thing about peptides. These are typically things that are recognized by your body, that your body already makes. So the way I use it to treat injuries is we'll do the MGF right here in the office, and just usually at the acute, especially for an acute injury, we'll just do it at the site of injury, either into the muscle, into the tendon, at the site of injury, and then we'll send them home with IGF-1 LR3 to do on a daily basis for 7 to 10 days after they injure themselves. Of course, we usually combine that. I probably will stack it with some BPC-TB4. I like that combo. It's a nice, easy, because it's in one syringe, so you can combine it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. and then what did you experience when you did that quicker healing?
Yes. So this was a high hamstring strain, and it's just such a terrible place, because what you and I do a lot of times is a lot of the time during the day either sitting or standing, but not moving. And mm-hmm. so that's a really easy strain to happen. And I was a competitive runner, and that's just what happens. So I did have to give up running. It still bothers me if I run, but I can do all kinds of other sport now with no trouble.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good one. I also would echo that idea of it's, if there's a problem that you have that you can't fix, it feels psychologically fairly overwhelming. If there's a problem, the interesting thing is that the peptides, you can inject them right in the area, and they kind of have a local effect and a systemic effect. And so then, I've had so many little nagging things that bug me for years that then, I'm just grabbing an insulin syringe and injecting it in, and you're just injecting that subcutaneously. Will you go subcutaneously over that area, or will you try to go into the belly of the muscle?
Absolutely into the belly of the muscle or the tendon sheath if we can get it there with ultrasound guidance. Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so then that's super perfect. And then a lot of those hamstring tears in that area, I'll do a sciatic nerve hydrodissection because the sciatic nerve is sort of right underneath those hamstrings.
Yes.
Kind of interesting.
You can do the cerebrolysin in that area just subcutaneously, and it makes a big difference.
You know, that's an interesting one too, because as nerves go and then they sort of arborize up to the skin, what happens is if you put something subcutaneously, I think it's almost like a delivery mechanism.
Right.
And get absorbed in those nerves and sort of track down. And so even though I would be a relatively big proponent of doing things around nerves or close to nerves, like with ultrasound, I think that as we evolve in the next kind of year or two, we're going to have more and more examples. And I even find it myself where we do subcutaneously something and it gets absorbed. And then that has a similar effect to a nerve hydrodissection. Tell me about cerebrolysin since you brought it up.
Right. So that's what I use it for local injections, especially for the sciatic nerve, just because it's so close to the surface of the skin there at the gluteal fold, it makes it really easy. I feel like it's really getting in there and I get good results with cerebrolysin. We also use it for things like trigger point injections in the cervical, thoracic, that for if patients are having a lot of like a whiplash injury or, tech neck that they get that pain in their upper back, thoracic spine. That's a great one to use for that. Of course, I use it for, we use it in much higher doses, an IV for cognitive impairment or for post-COVID difficulty with word finding, for thought, thinking clearly, that sort of thing. We use it a lot there, and also for cognitive decline in general, for age-related cognitive decline, we'll use it there too. But the for pain control, it's great. And you can use really surprisingly big doses without really much side effect, and a lot of it you can do sub-Q.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me, so then you brought up, I think, the thing that is kind of the defining problem that I think may be what we face in our lives, which is this long COVID. It's interesting, we'll see a percentage of people with kind of brain fog difficult, entrepreneurs that are just trying to make, or working people that are overall okay, but struggling, all the way to catastrophic, can't get out of bed, looks like complex Lyme and mold, but worse. How are you thinking about long COVID? How do you put that together? And then what are you finding that's helpful?
So this is a hard one for a lot of our patients. They're coming back post COVID and saying, I kind of flew through it with 3 days. It was nothing, but now I feel like I can't find words. Now I feel like I can't participate in meetings without stumbling over what I'm thinking, without getting stopped. And so I think there's a lot of things that are contributing to that, that are maybe COVID, maybe not, but I do think it's real. And I'm seeing a lot of patients with that. So what we're doing to treat that is a lot of them, depending on what we find, we're doing some research, looking into see, like you said, are they coming back looking like a SIRS patient, like a mold or Lyme patient? And so those patients, we put on a whole protocol and they're treated in a completely unique way based on that diagnosis with their inflammation control and detoxification and all the processes there. But the ones in general, the ones who are coming just with cognitive impairment post-COVID, and these aren't people who would fail a cognitive assessment. That's not the kind of person I'm talking about. It's like you or me, but they're aware that they're not able to participate in staff meetings like they used to be able to, or to be able to quickly access information or to retain information. So for example, I have an executive who's learning how to play the guitar, and he used to be able to remember the chords for a whole song. And now he has to keep looking back at the chords. And so this is one of his outlets for stress. And I don't want him to lose that, because we need him doing the job that he's supposed to be doing. So for him, we've put him on Dihexa, which I think is one of the best ones. We've given him some cerebrolysin by IV. We also put him on ketamine nasal spray at bedtime, some RG3, and I've got him on probably low dose naltrexone. He's on a lot of things to try to get this back to, because we need to do it. He's got to get better. We're also using acellular growth factors in him. So he's definitely noticing improvement.
Tell him what the RG3 is.
It's the R isomer of ginseng number 3. It's a piece of ginseng that's been specifically found to be beneficial in decreasing inflammation in the brain. So it's commercially available through most compounding pharmacies.
Yeah, I like that one too. So then, you know, it's interesting. So my interpretation of that is basically kind of similar to what we do, which is a full court press with a variety of different modalities. You know, there's a little ketamine in there, which will help with fight or flight and resetting sort of depression, anxiety, turns off the NMDA receptor, peptides, supplements, and kind of an overall total approach, you know, that's paired with, you know, in Dihexa's case, something that's going to increase brain-derived neurotrophic factor.
Right. And we're using NAD sub-Q, and patients are getting great response with that sub-Q dosing. I think it really helps. And that gives them a little bit more control, because a lot of them, just because of COVID in general, because of the social aspect of COVID, going, you know, being out of work, coming back to work, all the changes that are happening for everyone. I think we've really depleted our NAD stores in general, both with the infection itself and then just life around that. So especially the ones who respond well to ketamine, I'm concerned that they are, one of the reasons that they're going down that trip, that's pathway, the IDO pathway to try to get is to get more production of NAD from the kynurenic and quinolinic acid. So what they're telling me by their response is that they probably need some NAD. So we're giving them NAD in small doses. Most of them are 2-3 weeks and don't feel like they need it anymore after that. So we're just replacing their ability to repair, especially DNA repair post COVID. They're just losing, they've lost all their NAD. So their certs don't work and their PARPs don't work and all that.
Okay, tell people what the certs and the PARPs are.
They are chemicals in the body in every cell that are involved in helping with DNA repair. So we are protecting their longevity genes and improving the, instead of killing off the cell because it's gotten too much DNA damage, we're allowing them to stay around and avoid apoptosis because they're able to repair their DNA. So we're not recycling all those cells that don't need to be lost that are recoverable.
What sort of dosing when you do sub-Q NAD in terms of milligrams are you giving people?
It's very individual. Most people, I start out at 50 milligrams, like little teeny dose sub-Q, because I want to see how they're going to respond. I've given up to 1200 sub-Q. Obviously, they can't do it all at once because it's in a 200 per ml vial, but they'll have to do it several times. You just have to be careful because it can cause insomnia. So they will, if you take it too close to bed, they'll have insomnia. And of course, sleep post whatever illness, stressor, you have to be aware of making sure that they're able to sleep.
It was kind of interesting for me. NED was like this pivotal sort of molecule that came to us also 6 years ago or something. Like we were like early with doing those IVs, and we were doing it a lot for addiction, but basically NED is like currency in the body that facilitates these oxidation reduction reactions that are sort of high energy ones. So then I'm just saying this to bring people up to speed. So then sometimes it'll do detox, like detoxing alcohol and stuff like that. But sometimes it turns on the sirtuin superfamilies and kind of does DNA healing. And it also sort of will turn your immune system on. And so then I love talking to people and hearing that they do exactly the same thing that I do, just because it's interesting. We've never had a conversation about NED. Sometimes really sick patients with SIRS or really bad mold and Lyme, if you give them NED, I think it drives a detox pathway. And if they're not prepared for that, then you can run into a little bit of trouble. But for people who are healthy, it can cause there's a little bit of a histamine sort of methylation issue that happens that can cause some flushing and nausea. And so then the dose that we like is 25 to 50 milligrams. And then particularly for starting and for people that are sensitive, I find that you do that dose and they have no side effects.
Yes.
We often, once you get used to it, we'll go up to like 100 milligrams. But then I like those lower dosing and I like those lower dosing. And then, you know, there was this question we had over the years, what's going to happen if you put all of these people on AD? Are they going to be stuck on that? And then it was interesting because when we started getting onto peptides, what happens, the combination of NAD and peptides is a super great combination, particularly like the mitochondrial peptides and sort of cognitive enhancing peptides, because I find that they work by different mechanisms. And then once you balance that, just like you said, people are not so dependent on it, but sometimes it'll take a little while and then you'll come into balance. And then it becomes one of many things that we can use to begin to modify basically our biology, but also sort of how we feel.
Yes, it's been a great tool to add to everything else we're doing. It seems like back in the day when I was a family doctor, we used to give, you know, if someone was in counseling, we would give them an antidepressant just to get them to the point where they could actually participate in therapy and counseling. And it's sort of that same way with NAD. You're giving this to them just so they can participate in all the other things we're doing, so that their immune system is ripened, so that their DNA is salvaged, so that their stem cells have gotten back to being quiet, just so that everything is now able to function properly. So now the mitochondria can work and now we can decrease our production of reactive oxygen species and everything begins to calm back down again.
So then I wasn't going to say this, but since you did, I got to say it. It's kind of interesting. The person who was my mentor, who is this Dr. Metier in Louisiana, who's kind of like the OG person that I think is fundamentally, and thank you, Dr. Metier, who's probably responsible for 95% of all the people that got interested in NAD, you know, in the world. I mean, he has been profoundly, and you know, I remember we were like the only people doing NAD on the West Coast. And then now I talk to like addiction people in LA, and then everybody is doing NED, like the whole, and so it's shocking how helpful it's been. But he told me and it was such a bold statement, he told me there's no psychiatric condition that doesn't respond well, he's a psychiatrist, to NED. And that seems so crazy. And then I remember I had a patient that went through a horrible trauma that was in a fugue state. And then they came in and I said, oh, it was like, they need to do a 5150 and go to the hospital, because they're like, it's just kind of like what you said, they can't even begin to participate in this conversation. And the family told me, oh, just give them NAD, and if it fails, then we'll take them to the hospital. And I go, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. And, but I did it. And then we did 25 milligrams of NAD, which is, would be very low dose.
And tiny.
Somewhere between 25 and 50 milligrams, the person just looked at me and goes, hello, Dr. Cook, I'm back.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so then, but, and then I find that it's, as we start to unwrap the biochemistry, sort of pairing that with peptides is something that helps a lot on the mental, emotional, spiritual. I think it helps a lot on the cognitive performance for kind of healing the entrepreneur. And then I think it also helps with these really sick people. And so then now the combination of small molecules, other molecules, peptides, and now we're just working on dosing as we kind of play in these different communities.
Yes. And I think I consider the high performing athlete, the high performing, cognitively performing entrepreneur, and the very sick patient to all be pulling from similar resources and to all be dealing with similar cellular disease states. And so I treat them very similarly. And then of course I have a few very elderly patients, and I think they're dealing with, I think that severe age, 85 plus, are really dealing with the same kind of cellular disease state, because we're challenging their cells at such a high rate. We're dealing with that high oxidative state. We're dealing with the inability to repair. We're dealing all of those things that are very, that apply to all those different states.
100%, 100%. So then take me down a road. Let's say I bought in and let's say that I am an executive with brain fog who had COVID, and I need some help and I'm struggling in meetings. So then how would you sort of put that together in terms of like how COVID has actually affected us? And then let's talk about designing a little program around that person.
Sure. So if this was my patient, I would, the first, of course, we would get a long history. There's usually something pre-COVID that was a participant that maybe was present. I have a patient right now who is an executive. This is the same guitar player. He had a lot of trouble before COVID with some mood disorder that was fairly well controlled, but that had always been present. And then we get to treating, he had COVID, had a pretty significant case of it, several weeks, was ill, and got over that, no problem. But then really noticed that the cognitive decline occurred post that. So there's, of course, we have to take into consideration all the factors that are going on. He's also got things going on internationally that are contributing to his business. So his stress level is greater. There are things happening personally that are contributing to his stress level. So he's not sleeping as well. So you have to attack from all those different points. And making sure that he's doing all the things, you know, I don't just start with peptides from the get-go, but because this person was all in and ready to do whatever it took to get him back to functioning, that's where we started. We started with giving him his chief complaint was brain fog and fatigue. So we started with NAD as a base post-COVID, we started with NAD. And then we gave him, because of his brain, I started him with the LDN. I wanted to do, we just put him on, I think I started him with 3 milligrams straight.
And that's low dose naltrexone.
Yes. Then to get him off of, and that was for sleep, I gave him a really small dose of progesterone too, 5 milligrams of oral progesterone at bedtime. And so that combo really was a good way to get him to sleep. Progesterone has some really great brain calming benefits. And so especially for inflammation, and that's where we started was with the, was that LDN NAD in the morning and progesterone at bedtime.
And then I'm just going to unpack this a little bit as we go. So then the low dose naltrexone sort of is a kind of an agonist antagonist sort of that works on receptors in the brain that kind of can regulate, would you say autoimmunity to some extent?
Yes. So here's what I explain to patients. There's a tattletale in the cell called nuclear factor kappa B. It, whenever anything bad is happening, infection, illness, trauma, cellular stress for whatever reason, that goes into the nucleus and tattletales to the nucleus that something terrible is happening. Oh my gosh, the sky is falling, henny penny. And then the nucleus begins generating all the things, the signals to tell everybody else around it that it needs help. So LDN, low-dose naltrexone, blocks that tattletale from entering the nucleus and causing that inflammatory cascade to begin. So we don't get a lot of the things happening to the cell. It doesn't block it so strongly like some of the autoimmune things we know for autoimmune, the pharmaceutical autoimmune things like Humira. It doesn't block as severely as that. So it does still allow you to respond to an infection, for example, but it's going to keep that under wraps. So you're not going to have such an extreme response. It'll be an appropriate response.
Okay. Now, can I unpack one thing about that I think is useful for people to hear? And then this is almost on the Lyme and mold spectrum as well as long COVID. And I've been explaining this to people. I said, if you had COVID like 6 months ago, are you actively making COVID virus in your body right now?
No.
So then, but you had this infection and it was a bad infection and it did all this stuff. But then let's say there's a long COVID patient. Are they still having a response to a virus that was there, but that's not actually living in them anymore?
We think so.
And so then interestingly, what happens is a lot of times, and I see this in complex illness, that it may be that in Lyme, the Lyme is potentially not active, but we're just reacting to peptides from that bacteria that are still there. A little bit like COVID, we're still reacting to the spike protein. And so then the reaction is actually more detrimental than actually having that peptide of the Borrelia bacteria there. And so then calming that immune and basically NF-kappa-B mediated reaction down then really makes people feel better because it calms down basically this exaggerated response, which is what's causing, I would say, maybe potentially a lot of the symptoms.
Which is one of the reasons why I like using Dihexa in these patients, especially because it is the angiotensin II receptor that gets triggered in these patients by the spike protein. And frankly, in a lot of disease states, in high blood pressure, in high cholesterol, this is what happens in diabetes, that angiotensin II receptor gets triggered. If instead we trigger that angiotensin IV receptor, it does all of that anti-inflammatory triggering or cascade signaling. And so it can overcome the angiotensin II signaling. So this is the reason we like Dihexa, because of it binding to the angiotensin IV receptor. It is an agonist at that receptor. So it really helps to create that anti-inflammatory cascade, the non-inflammatory cascade. And so things get calmed down. Your macrophages and monocytes that are in that phase, that phase one, get shut off. They phase shift back to that calm janitor type macrophage.
And so then that's super important. And then also Dihexa has this cognitive enhancing, which everybody that has long COVID. Tell me about that. What's your perspective on how that works?
So we know that Dihexa can raise BDNF in the brain by 10,000 times. It specifically works on oligodendrocytes. The oligodendrocytes are responsible for laying down myelin sheath in the nerve cells. Myelin sheath is that sort of slick cascade transmission pathway that the signals are transmitted back and forth to different cells or along one cell in order to send a message to the next cell. And if those have any damage to them, which of course they do in the case of cognitive decline, we can reverse that. One of the things we know that DiHEX is specifically good for is MS, because that is the disease state in MS, is the decline or the lack of myelin sheath, that slick sheath that helps signals transmit more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. So then as you, there's this term that I felt like, you know, people like us were talking about immune dysregulation, the immune system being kind of stressed and overactive, but it was also really cellular dysregulation because the cells were really inflamed. And then interestingly, if you want to go down this road, then it's the cells are inflamed kind of from a genetic level, because basically there's an idea that the thing outside the cell is, if there's a lot of stress, it hits the membrane of the cell. And then basically that stress starts to work its way into the nucleus. And then the nucleus goes into an inflamed state so that the cell can respond back out. Like, that's a simplified way of thinking about it. But then that would kind of be a similar pattern to what we see in, like, you know, SIRS and like the major immune problems, complex mold, complex Lyme of our day. And then COVID is going to be sort of, we'll take a percentage of people that may have those problems or other problems can be driven into a state like that. And so now it kind of makes sense that we're using basically the natural molecules that exist within the body, or we're using biochemistry basically to begin to reverse these things and then basically unwind and then basically reset biology basically on a functional sort of pathway.
Exactly. It's one of the things I love about using peptides, because I'm not doing anything that body doesn't already know. I'm not giving you any sort of signal that's not familiar. I'm saying, hey, let's do this thing that your body's not doing really great right now, at least until you can get back to doing it on your own. Right. And that's been my experience. You know, patients, like you said, if I'm giving you NAD, especially post-COVID, if I'm giving you NAD for that, I'm going to see over time, you don't need it anymore. You start saying, doc, do I need to take this anymore? Because I don't really feel any difference anymore. And they get better.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We take them off of it. They don't need it anymore because they're making their own NAD, which is what they're supposed to be doing.
That's exactly right. And then with all of these things, I would say philosophically, we're probably going to be similar of sort of, with a few exceptions, of generally doing things and then rotating off and doing and rotating off. And then in the rotation, then sort of feeling like, oh, okay, how do I feel? How's things going? And then that kind of relates to your psychology of how you're feeling. But then basically, for me, what I feel like is I end up with so much control over it that it makes me feel calm. It's yes. Like a psychology enhancer.
It's interesting to treat. I have a woman who owns a cosmetics line, and it's interesting to treat these people for a while with a combination of peptides. You know, if you can afford it, you can have the world of peptides. And so treating her with this combination, she's finally figuring out what her body rhythms are, mm-hmm. and says, oh, I know it's time for me to stop my tesamorelin. Oh, I know it's time for me to go back on my DiHEXA. Oh, I feel like I need some. She can tell when her body's got, because she's been doing it now for a couple of years with me. So it's interesting to watch them also develop their own intelligence and intuition about it, because their body will tell them when they're done and when they need the next thing.
Well, and then that's why it's like a good one. This is actually kind of a good one that I was telling somebody, you know, every doctor that does something will do too much of their own thing, you know, so then, and so then you realize aesthetic people all do way too much aesthetic injections on themselves. And so you see them, it's like, oh my God, you know, the hormone people do too many hormones on themselves. And so that's, it's a little interesting. It's just interesting to, and you see it when you walk around at the, when we walk around at the anti-aging meetings. But then the amazing thing about peptides, to really understand how to do it as a doctor, you have to live the lifestyle.
Exactly. And
then in doing that, then initially, and I see there's a, this period when you're doing sort of a lot, and then you kind of come into this home, like we're really in this fairly homeostatic balance of feeling it and then cycling on and off and sort of trying things. And it's kind of fairly nuanced and not too aggressive, but like it's, I feel it's incredibly helpful and to do it. And then like, in terms of anything that I've ever done, is sort of the most enjoyable, because I'm actually talking to a lot of people. And then I do, like now I do a lot of 10 minute conversations. I just tell people, oh, I'll talk to you for like, to people that I like, I'll talk to you for 10 minutes, because then you kind of figure out, and then we make we talk for 5 minutes. And so then we talk and figure out what to do. And then now they have a great intervention that they do. I'll talk to them again. And so I don't know. Now then, you mentioned growth hormone secretagogues, tesamorelin. How have long COVID patients responded to that? And then how do you put that together in terms of the architecture of a peptide plan?
I've been a little anxious to use it in my long COVID patients. I would rather use something that I can get rid of quickly if I need to, you know, it lasts 18, 24 hours, something like that. And so I'd rather have something that worst case scenario, because a lot of these patients with long COVID are multi-chemical sensitive. So I hate to give them something that has such a long half-life. So I usually will start with one of the shorter acting ones. Probably IPA alone. And I like IPA alone for this.
Ipamorelin.
Yes, because a lot of these patients will have intestinal distress. They'll have some sort of they just have messed up microbiome and it doesn't work. Constipation is a big report post illness. And so the ipamorelin really helps with that because of improving intestinal motility as well as improving the cell's ability to function. We know that one of the things that happens with these cells is they are no longer the affected cells that are affected by even stress. They are no longer able to maintain that hypoxic lumen that's necessary for the life of the good bugs that are supposed to be there that we like Akkermansia and others. And so those bugs really prefer to be in a hypoxic state or environment. And we allow the growth because now the oxygen is not being used by the stressed out intestinal epithelial cells. Now we allow the growth of other bacteria and the dysbiosis to occur because the cells aren't functioning optimally. So not only does the ipamorelin improve motility just purely by its straight up action, but also it improves the ability of the cells, the intestinal epithelial cells, to go through beta oxidation. So they're now using that oxygen and stealing it from the bugs in the lumen. So now we begin, it's almost like this, I think of an engine that's just starting to go back and now we get it going again. And now the engine is working because the intestinal epithelial cells are using all that oxygen from the blood supply. So there's none to go to the lumen. Now there's a hypoxic environment. All those obligate aerobes die off and many of the facultative anaerobes die off. And now we have the bugs we want there instead of the original dysbiosis that occurs because of the illness. You know, that's another place where we use zonulin because, where we use lorazepam because the infections as well as the stress itself of whatever's happening will raise that zonulin. So zonulin is a chemical that disrupts the barriers between your epithelial cells. And so the epithelium, the lining on the inside, pretty much from the nose, the tip of the nose down to the anus, all of those cells have these gates between them. Our daughter lives in a new neighborhood, and they have their, you know, houses right side by side. And the they each have a little gate in between. So I use that example when I'm talking to patients about this, that zonulin is produced in response to the infection or inflammation that's going on, or even dysbiosis itself. And stress will cause that. They will raise zonulin, which then breaks down that gate in between. And you can imagine if your gates are broken down, the things that can get in and out that aren't supposed to. So we'll use lorazepam as part of this treatment protocol to try to restore that function. And so many things are affected by dysbiosis. Your bile acids, which are very involved in brain function post-illness, post-stressor. And so I see this as one of the factors that we put in the line of treatment.
What, tell us about lorazepam in terms of how it works.
It blocks zonulin. So we know that the things like in celiac disease, that gluten will raise zonulin as well, but stress will do it, cortisol, stress will do it, and infections or illness will do it.
I've been taking lorazepam also for the last 6 months.
And how much do you take?
I think it's 200 milligrams. How much are you taking?
500? Yes.
And so then I'm taking it in combination with BPC orally. And I think it's kind of wonderful. I think it's definitely a benefit. But then if you think about like what Dr. Turner is just saying, many of those long COVID people that we were talking about, the reason that they're long COVID is that they had some leaky gut and it was going on, and they had probably high zonulin because of that. And so then they had basically inflammation that was in their gut that was leaking out. And then part of that was maybe what they're eating. But then as you hear, part of that is the microbiome, what bacteria are in that gut. And so then that's an interesting one, that potentially a lot of what's going on is that we ended up allowing bacteria that like oxygen instead of the ones that don't like oxygen, because we tend to be more healthy in our gut if we have more of the bacteria that don't have any oxygen. And, you know, I've actually bought into this to the extent that I really don't really recommend people do rectal ozone anymore, because I think that is introducing oxygen and helping to grow the oxygen loving bacteria. And so then that's just a little interesting data point. But then figuring out how to fix people, it's in our contract as functional medicine doctors that we have to dedicate 20% of every conversation to the gut.
Yes. You do. I mean, I remember the naturopath saying that to me years ago, and I just poo-pooed it, and they were right.
You poo-pooed it?
Yeah, years ago.
That's a Freudian slip. Poo-poo.
Back when I was yeah. Yep. Back when I was a regular family doctor, I remember them saying, it's all about the gut. And I thought they were crazy, and they were not.
I have one of my best friends in the world is an amazing doctor, Shannon Bryan. Shout out to Shannon Bryan. And she was in town visiting me. This was a long time ago. And she needed CME. And so then she said, hey, I'm going to be in town and I have vacation, and I had vacation. And so she said, hey, let's go to a rheumatology board review course, because there was just like a board review course for, and if you're like us, I would go to a board review course of a different specialty every week if I could, because it's just like, yes. you get the deep download. And this was probably 10 years ago. And so then we spent the week just going through rheumatology cases. And I knew that we were onto something, because we went there and then every single lecture was a lecture about the microbiome. But these are people with problems in their wrists, but the inflammation in the gut was causing that wrist. And these are just straight up hardcore, like, you know, UCSF professors giving the lectures. And so then then she kept looking at me and she was like, oh, the microbiome. And, you know, now that's, I think if that becomes, you know, what I tell people is the gut is something that we are going to project manage for the next 10 years.
Yes.
You know, just like it's interesting. What are your top three things for gut health if I gave you that one?
Ooh, okay, so the research on butyrate is outstanding, but I haven't found it to be that impressive in clinical practice taken orally. The only time I found it to be helpful is using it rectally, which is hard to convince a lot of people to do unless they're very symptomatic.
How much do you give them?
500.
500
milligrams.
How many? My
compounder hates making it.
Yes. Did you hear that I put out on a thread somewhere about how we use the rectal ozone catheters to do that?
Oh, no.
I have a good way to do that, because I think they compound it for us at Pure, I think, as a liquid. And so then what they have, these little catheters that are rectal ozone catheters that are very small and very easy to slip into the rectum and thread up about 2 or 3 inches. And then you can take a syringe, like a 20 or 30 cc syringe, and then you can draw up, fill that up. And then the nice thing is 10, 20, 30 cc's, then you screw that on to what the rectal ozone catheter. And there's millions of places you can buy those online. And there are some that are very soft, and then there's some that are more firm. And the firm ones are kind of nice because you can, it just, if you push with your finger and then it'll slide in. And the soft ones also are nice because they're softer. Both, just see which one you like. And then interestingly, it's very nice because it's very measured, because you can inject 10 cc's. Now then, what you have to do is you have to squeeze your anus, then when you pull it out, and hold it in. And then what I have people do is lie down. But for people with real inflamed sigmoid colons and real inflamed colons in general, I have found that to be, I like the probutyrate pills. And then I've been taking 2 or 3 of those also, along with the lorazepam, for the last 6 or 8 months.
Did you ever try tributrin?
No.
There's lots of great research.
Where's that? Where do you get that at?
Who makes it? I get it on, who makes it? I think Designs for Health makes it.
Okay.
Tributrin. There's a lot of research on it.
So then, And what, tell me about that as opposed to regular butyrate.
So it's an ester backbone with 3 butyrate fatty acid chains attached to it.
Okay.
Opposed to being sodium butyrate or calcium magnesium butyrate, it's actually an ester backbone with 3.
Orally.
Yes.
Okay. So butyrate number one, for gut health number two.
I love a really good fiber. So probably Megapre by Microbiome Labs. That's probably my favorite right now. And then my third favorite is one of the many IgG products that are out there. So Enterogam is the branded product, the pharmaceutical grade product. I forget we're not doing CME, so I can say names of things. the Microbiome Labs makes Mega Pre IgG 2000, Mega IgG 2000. NuMedica makes Immuno PRP, something like that.
Basically all the same thing that are made by the same people, that it's like an antibody that are bovine antibodies.
Serum.
Exactly. SBI Protect is the other one. And so then the imagine if you made an antibody to COVID, these are antibodies and they bind onto gram-negative rods and inflammation and toxicity in the gut. And they really downregulate the amount of inflammation that those cells are seeing. And so then
just allows them to recover.
And so then what I do is this is a hot tip. Somebody gave me a coffee cup, but then we put Laird Hamilton's coconut creamer, and then we put a couple scoops of the immunoglobulin powder in. And then we'll put a little bit of brain octane oil in also. And so we blend that up, and it kind of tastes like a smoothie. It's like an amazing coffee. But then every day I take the immunoglobulins, and I found that to be a super amazing.
That's great.
And then I do it. And then I would not do it if I didn't do it, but it's part of my thing. And then I do it every day. So it's kind of amazing.
Right. I'm a fan of that. I would say Lorazepam's my next one, but it's a unique patient. It's not going to be an everyday patient that's going to need that.
Mm-hmm. Do you find BPC-157 either systemically or orally is very helpful for gut health?
Yes. I primarily use it for trauma, for injury. I just haven't had as much need. I use it in my SIRS patients for inflammation in general. Mm-hmm. It's one of the few they can actually tolerate. So often we'll do BPC.
So then if you hear, it's kind of interesting because basically I would somewhat agree with you. It's kind of like everybody would love to talk about BPC for orally, and I would like it. And I'm currently, you know, taking a product that has BPC and the lorazepam. But then I'll cycle on and off of those things. And also systemically, I think it will have some benefits. And then interestingly, I did a BPC through an insulin pump. Mm. And when I did that, I was like, and it's kind of interesting because these peptides sort of have a short half-life. And I did it for like a weekend. And I was like, my gut has never felt this good in my entire life. It just felt like, and so it's interesting that it's definitely has an effect, but I do think that in terms of fixing dysbiosis and leaky gut and inflammation, those other things are potentially more important. And that illustrates the importance of a diversity of strategies. It's never just peptides. It's kind of interesting.
Right. And they've got to meditate. They've got to do all the things, you know, they've got to sleep at night. So whatever the things are that are going to be helpful, you know, these are helpful in the interim. If they're not able to, for whatever reason, they're not able to, you know, they got young kids and they have an elderly mom and they got to take care of both of them. So they can't get out of their stressful situation. This is a good Band-Aid, but it's not going to fix the problem if the stressor persists, if the stressor is still there. So like you or me with jobs that we have, running companies and running around the country teaching and all the things that we're doing, you know, those things are going to go on. So we need to, those are sort of ongoing treatments. What do you use as a marker for when you're going to stop or rotate off your BPC?
For me, I would just be like, that would be a good one. I would just be like a feel of how I feel. And then basically like my gut feels so perfect that like I haven't taken that product in like a week because it just feels perfect. And then I was sitting there going, God, I can't even believe how good it is. And so then I then I will stop doing anything. And then what I'm doing is then I'll have that little conversation on that topic. God, it still feels perfect. And so then if that problem sort of goes away, then it's almost like I'll cycle off of it a little bit. And then if you said, you know, we have a joke around home with Barb of like, we're looking for a BPC miracle because, you know, if she cuts herself or burns herself in the kitchen or something like that, it's so helpful for burns and cuts and,
oh my gosh,
you know, and little muscle injuries. And so then I've sort of mostly evolved into like what you said, as my little emergency pain thing that I have. And then, that I'm cycling on and off of.
Yes. It's in my regimen. So I do powerlifting as a sport. And, so I use it after, I use it post-workout. Definitely.
How much?
Probably 20 units of how much is it? A 2000 mics per ml.
Okay. So like, so then 50 units of that dose would be 1,000 milligrams. And so then half of that would be 500. So like 400 micrograms.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so then that would be a good one. I'll always use 400 to like 1,000 micrograms, but then we'll use high dose often for major problems. And so whether in
concussion
or major, if I'm doing nerve hydrodissection in an area that's super inflamed. So then this is a great little idea in thinking about dosing. If I'm dosing for subcutaneous dosing for a systemic effect, I'm looking for a nice little bump and then raise an effect and having some systemic / local effect, but I'm thinking of low dose. But then if there's an area that's really inflamed and you go into that area, what I find is you can go to very high dosing.
Yes.
And so then if there's a nerve that's really profoundly inflamed, then I do a nerve hydrodissection, I'll use high dosing. And so then that, and then framing that and then thinking about that and kind of building our clinical experience of what people can take in what area has been kind of probably the thing that I'm most interested in.
How about intra-articular? Have you done anything with that yet?
Yeah. And so then I would be a fan of that. And then that one is another one where blood supply is also not potentially that great. And so then you can go to quite high doses intra-articular. And so then I would be a big fan of intra-articular.
Like 2 grams?
Yeah, or more. Like 2 to 5 to potentially even more milligrams. And then I think that it tends to, you know, the classic idea for joints, it has been to do, was traditionally thymus and beta 4 and BPC together. And then, you know, I initially was hearing about and then doing a lot of thymus and beta 4 in a 2-to-1 ratio. And then, you know, the other thing that you can do is the fragments of thymus and beta 4 that I think are, you know, potentially, first of all, they're much more potent because they're just a smaller active fragments. And then I find they work way better than thymus and beta 4. And that is partially because of dosage, but partially because they're small. And so there's also an immunologic reaction to them. And then I'll combine those with BPC. And I would be a huge fan. They seem to I think that with joints, we're going to have a conversation that's kind of like the gut. So then what, if you look at 5 years from now, what I think a lot of people are going to be doing is cycling through hyaluronic acid, cycling through other combinations, cycling through peptides, cycling through PRP or PRP plus other things. And so then now, or growth factors, or plus cell matrix. And so then with that in mind, then you begin to realize, oh, that's a fairly robust approach to taking care of joints. And realistically, I think that that's the most important thing that you can do for anti-aging, because if your joints are good and you can achieve that powerlifting biomechanics, you have to have good biomechanics to be a powerlifter. If you don't, then you can't do it. That also sounded so badass when you said, "I do powerlifting as a sport." I do powerlifting also for comedy.
I have a really good trainer.
I do powerlifting for your comic amusement, but I would like to take a lesson from you so that I can say I do powerlifting as a sport.
It's a lot of fun. We also, we haven't started using it, but that article came out about using, about using liraglutide intra-articularly?
Oh, yeah. Explain what liraglutide is.
So it's a GLP-1 agonist. GLP-1 is a protein that's found, a peptide that's normally found in your body that helps your cells to choose to burn fat as a substrate instead of burning sugar. It has lots and lots of other benefits in addition to that. So that's a very simple way to think about it. But you could imagine if your chondrocytes were better able to function, much like your intestinal epithelial cells we talked about in a minute ago, that theoretically it would be a really helpful thing if your chondrocytes were able to work by beta oxidation, burning fat instead of burning sugar. So they were working more efficiently and producing fewer reactive oxygen species or inflammatory chemicals inside the joint.
Yeah, I wouldn't have predicted that one. Although, you know, the GLP sort of category is an amazing category because pretty helpful for weight loss, pretty helpful for controlling, you know, blood sugar, which is probably, I was talking to John Francois and he says, you know, basically all you need to do, he's good at kind of summing things down. And he says, all you need to do is control inflammation and blood sugar.
He's right.
Are you using those? And then what's been your experience on that in terms of your practice?
Yes, we use it a lot. I've the weight loss stories are amazing. 100 pounds, 200 pounds, really, especially when patients are also doing, it's just like Dihexa. It's just like the others. If you are also doing the things that you need to do to take care of yourself, then they're super effective. So exercise and diet alone, you might lose whatever you're going to lose, but you add to exercise and diet that GLP-1, and now the weight loss is amazing. And you're able to maintain that weight loss. We're using it in patients with APOE4 gene mutations, which is a predisposition to dementia. You know, this category of peptide was originally studied in patients with Parkinson's and other neurodegeneration like dementia, Alzheimer's disease. And so I'm using it in those patients at a super low dose. I have them just use 25 micrograms, little teeny dose, milligrams, sorry, little teeny dose. Micrograms.
Of liraglutide?
Or semaglutide? Yes. Sorry, I'm getting mixed up. I use semaglutide so much now, I forget the dosing for liraglutide. So okay.
So you're primarily using semaglutide?
Almost exclusively. Okay. It's just so easy at once a week.
Okay.
And the research is impressive that it's more effective than the liraglutide is.
Yeah. How much nausea and other stuff do you see with that?
Almost 100% if you get too high of a dose.
Right. And so then that's a thing to manage, but I would agree. And then that is, maybe we buried the lead, you know what I mean? This is the weight loss, it's because if you fix that, that would be potentially drive a lot of longevity.
So many things. It lowers cholesterol. I mean, there's research to back that up, but I have patients who've dropped their cholesterol amazingly. Now, again, you have to be careful. You don't want to go too low on patients' cholesterol, and especially the ones who are taking the liraglutide plus testosterone, you might see their cholesterol drop really low. And then you run into problems with depleting plasma allergens, and we don't even, that's another story for another day, but I titrate that dose to effect. And then I have them start out from the very beginning. Tell me what your goal weight is. If your goal weight is whatever, 150, then we're going to get you to 150 and then we're going to drop your dose back down. So you don't have to feel nauseated for it to be effective for weight loss. A lot of people will lose weight even without the nausea. It should cause weight loss even without the nausea. One of the side effects that I think is less common, but is something for people to know about, is the possibility of insomnia. So just be aware of that in your patients. It does bind to, it's the CART receptor. It's cocaine, amphetamine, something. I can't remember all of it, but there's a receptor in the brain for that. Anyway, it binds to that same receptor and can cause you to have insomnia, just wakefulness, can't sleep at night because of the liraglutide or semaglutide. So be aware of that. It's less common with the semaglutide than with the liraglutide. And it typically wears off after 2 or 3 weeks of therapy. So just be aware that's the case. And you may need to augment their other care in the beginning. If sleep is a real problem, it's not always my first go-to.
Okay, that's a good one. And then also the nausea sort of wears off once you kind of get used to it too.
You got it. Yep.
And a lot of people will eat less too. A lot of people tell me.
Yes. And the nice thing about it being compounded is you can go at really low doses.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And then that would be like a theme that we could talk about for forever. And then also I actually would echo that the low dosing and then kind of finding your way up is such a better way to practice this type of stuff, I think.
I agree.
Than a one size fits all.
It's fun to, you also have to realize that being sick for a patient, especially someone who's a high achiever, being sick is a loss of control. And so if you give them control over the thing, for example, I get control over what the dose is that I take, how much I feel, where I'm going, then it's one less thing I feel like is out of control. And now I've restored the control over my body. So my cortisol goes down.
That's how I feel too. So then speaking of that, then the one other thing, and then this is going to be one thing that actually helps with sleep. Let's maybe just chat a little bit about the kind of the growth hormone secretagogues. And, we talked a little bit about that, but, I will find that, I don't know if you found that, CJC and epimorelin, if people take that at night, sometimes can be fairly helpful for sleep.
Super helpful.
And then that also, people will, for people who are on the healthy side, will you have, and so then there's going to be a handful of different ones. So then there's sometimes people can just take the epimorelin. Sometimes people can take CJC and epimorelin. We talked about tesamorelin. How do you put that together over the arc of a year? Do you have people cycle on and off, or will you have people generally stay on it all year? And then there would be some people, power lifters like myself, who will do it, who might do it more than once a day, or would be more in the just once a day. Maybe that might be enough for you.
Right. So I'm using the CJC epimorelin. It depends on what goals we're trying to achieve. So am I trying to increase your fat burning? Then I'm probably going to do it fasting, and I'm going to do it. Well, obviously I'm going to do it fasting. I'm thinking of tesamorelin. Then I'm going to do it up to 4 times a day. If I can find a fasting window 4 times a day, then I'm gonna have them take it that often. And they'll get that because they're increasing their fat burning. Now you're probably gonna see that they get increase in muscle growth. So it's just a body composition shift. You might not see pounds on the scale change. So this is where we always use a bioimpedance analysis to measure where they are. You could do a Dex Fit, the DEXA machine to get where they are, or you can use, what is the other, a dunk tank, of course, a water dunk tank, you could do that, which is the gold standard for that. But the goal is to realize you're probably not going to change your pounds a lot, but what we should see is that increase in definition, increase in muscle mass, decrease in fat mass. I think my patients feel better on tesamorelin, and I know that because most of them refuse to come off of it, but I tell them ahead of time, look, I'm going to put you on it for 3 months. you got to come off of it. Give it a month. We'll put you on CJC in the interim, CJC and IPA in the interim, and then we'll go back to it for a couple of months. They fight every time, but I think it's a good practice to hold. And then I usually will follow their IGF-1 just to be sure it's not going too high. And most of them, it doesn't. Even on tesamorelin, which is supposed to raise IGF-1 higher, it doesn't. I don't usually see that. I usually see them staying right under 200, right where they should be.
Right. So interesting. So if in the past, I remember, and you could tell all of those people, I remember getting those patients that were on too much growth hormone.
Yeah.
And you tell exactly what they look like. You know, they look like, they all had that same look of like prior athletes, you know, that back in the day were, you know, when that was in vogue. But I think, you know, this as a concept is so much better. And I find levels are more balanced. People feel better. And then if you're only going to do it once a day and you can't sleep, then we have them take it at night, you know, fasting. If you're sleeping great, you may take it in the morning. I also feel like the tesamorelin is really a miraculously wonderful sort of feel good. And so then now
you have to be careful about dosing though, because they'll end up with some of those growth hormone symptoms, the swelling in their hands.
Oh, have you seen it?
Yeah. And you know, the nice thing is you just titrate it. That's the best part about it is I'll tell people, just like we talked about with everything else, if mm-hmm. you're finding that you're having that symptom, so I let them know what their side effect might be. And then you just titrate it down. If that's what you're experiencing, you're getting the benefit. You don't have to push yourself to the swelling to get the benefit.
That's right. Yeah. And then that one is usually a 6 days on, 1 day off. And then often mm-hmm. that comes compounded with ipamorelin.
Yes.
So then you get that benefit. So then now you begin to
Have them do it separately, and I'll do the IPA twice a day and the Tessa once a day.
Okay. Do you ever have them do Tessa once a day and CJC IPA at night?
No, I haven't found anybody that needs that.
Okay.
And the IPA is so inexpensive.
That's true. So then that's a good one. So then we usually will do the CJC IPA, but then I just have a algorithm of doing that. And so then you see the diversity of this. And then that's my favorite part about these podcasts, is that then I get to talk to people like you. And then in the diversity of how we're doing this ourselves and how it's plays out in our patients' lives is miraculously interesting. Mm-hmm. And then it's so much fun. We talked about many things, you know, from an anti-aging perspective. The one thing we were going to mention was the GHK, the copper peptide. How do you think about that? I mean, a lot of people use it aesthetically, but from an overall wellness perspective, what are your ideas about that one?
So, Dr. Picard back in the 70s was the one who figured out if you add GHK, which is naturally produced by your body, if you add extra GHK to a cell, it produces a more youthful cadre of proteins than it would otherwise produce. You know, you have your DNA is there and it's available for production. There are more youthful proteins that it can produce, or more aged proteins it can produce. The more youthful ones get wrapped up on the histones as we age and aren't as accessible or used as often. And the aging proteins are more accessible as we age. And so it appears as though the GHK actually increases production or the transcription of those more youthful proteins. So we do that just for anti-aging purposes on a twice a year basis. We do the same thing for, Epitalon and cerebrolysin on a cycle, a couple of months, maybe a month long, twice a year. And so these are our anti-aging protocol therapies. The science with the Epitalon is really very interesting, especially if you have Google Translate.
Right, exactly. You got to read the Russian literature. What sort of dosing will you do on a yearly cycle with GHK?
1 milligram daily for about 40 days. I like the idea of a 40 day.
Okay. Yeah. So then, interestingly, I think of GHK as, and I had this whole conversation with Jean-Francois about this the other day, about GHK is kind of like a bioregulator.
Yes.
And these small three amino acid peptides then would be bioregulator-esque. So KPV is not a known bioregulator, but would be kind of bioregulator-esque. That's that yes. Of MSH. And so then this one, I've never talked to you about this, but then this would be an interesting thing to kind of think about, which is that the research was really fantastic with Epitalon in this high dose range. And so then we've been doing some, you could almost, based on that kind of microdosing.
Yes.
Microdosing bioregulators in general, microdosing Epitalon or Epitalon. In parallel to that, GHK. And then thematically, those are basically affecting what genes you print. So
yes.
The transcriptome. And so then as a result of that, we find that whole category fairly helpful for neurological conditions and SIRS and immune problems. But then we're all somewhere on that spectrum.
Yes.
And so then, you know, thinking about the diversity of doing and then also all of these sick people, they react to everything, but they don't react to these small peptides. And so then I think the directionally in the next 5 years, I think that's the future. And
right. And then
figuring out, oh, okay, you know, if you think of high dose Epitalon being like 10 milligrams a day for 10 days twice a year and low dose being like a milligram a day for a month. And so then doing that milligram a day for a month or the 10 milligrams and then doing that for 2 or 3 months or every other month and then combining that then with other small as kind of a design element. And then yes. And then for me as a design element, to me, that's like actually my foundation. Mm-hmm. And then thinking, and then the next thing would be like the growth hormone. How are we going to manage that and think about that? And then basically all of these other things are basically symptom managing kind of biochemical directionally influencing. It's kind of.
Yes. Right. So your baseline is the Epitalon and the GHK and the growth hormone secretagogues. And then everything else you add on based on what's happening with the patient, what they specifically need. Agreed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then I would include some of the other bioregulators too. And like, for example, immune people will respond well to like Phylon and
Pinealon.
And then Pinealon very much so. And so then
TaxArrest. Have you used TaxArrest in your COVID patients?
I have not.
That's a great one.
Tell me about that.
It's amazing. It's the pulmonary bioregulator.
So I just haven't had it. And so we're going to talk about that. How do you dose that?
It's the oral one. So it's just 2 caps daily. In the COVID folks, I'm doing twice a day, 2 caps twice a day while they're sick.
Oh, for acute COVID.
Yep.
Okay. So then that's going to be a hot tip. And so then that would be a amazing idea. That would be a very, very, very good idea. Yep.
And the, what is it? Is it a Vasolutin? That's the, vascular.
Vesigent.
Vesigen, yeah.
Yeah, and so then I would have everybody on that. I just haven't had I haven't had access to the TaxArrest, so then we'll sort that out. It's kind of interesting. I try never to talk about COVID, acute COVID, but then this category would probably be a very useful category of stuff to eventually kind of dive into because you know, we're basically just thinking about how to use things to support your biology. And
right.
And there's certainly a lot of biology happening with COVID.
Well, and as we come out with the more recent water damage building data around actinomyces really probably being its actual problem and not the mold itself, these patients that are coming back with pulmonary actinomyces, this is that's where I'm finding lots of great use for Taxarest. But these are patients who are going to be using it daily for a while. Of course, they're using it in combination with other things. It's not the only thing we're doing, but this is one of the things that's been really helpful for that water damage building SIRS patient who has the pulmonary effects, and they're getting much more comfortable and better able to function with something like with those bioregulators. It's impressive.
And so then just for people to hear, and then it's interesting, I heard this and then it's just like all of these memories sparked up in my mind. If you walk into a building where there was a flood, and then you get that almost sort of musty smell, that is a smell of actinomyces. And then often in a water damaged building, there's mold and actinomyces, and then also probably gram negative rods, but that actinomyces and the mold, it's a combination, but potentially more so the actinomyces is actually, and it can colonize our skin.
Yes.
And then you can't see it. You can see the water damage in sheetrock, but you don't actually see the actinomyces, but you can wipe it down with soap. And then that basically dysregulates your immune system. And then once that happens, now you're basically vulnerable to other issues. And then that's like the cliff notes of it. But then basically you're more susceptible to COVID and more susceptible to things like tick-borne illnesses and viral illnesses, which are like
fish.
And what?
Fish, the ciguatera.
Oh yeah, that's right. You're down in Atlanta. Tell them what ciguatera is. That one's, because that's a real problem.
It is. So people go down to the Gulf near me, to the Gulf of Mexico, to the beach, and there are lots of fish. It comes from a dinoflagellate, and it's ciguatera is the toxin that is produced by the dinoflagellate that's eaten by the fish. So amberjack is a common fish grouper out of the Gulf. We love to go down and eat at Panama Joe's and get our, you know, crusted grouper sandwich or whatever that we're getting. But at times those are affected by ciguatera, and you can become very ill if you have a genetic susceptibility to this kind of response. You can become very ill from exposure to that toxin, that ciguatera toxin that's just in the fish flesh. It is not cooked out. So even if it doesn't mean that your fish wasn't cooked well, it's just, number one, you have a genetic susceptibility. Number two, or maybe an environmental, but probably genetic, probably there's a genetic predisposition. And then you eat this fish from the water. There's no testing available. We can test the fish. If you could find the fish, we could test that fish for ciguatera, but there's no test for humans. So we're kind of guessing based on your history. I have a woman who's a functional medicine doctor who came to me who was very, very neurologically ill and has been unable to work for several years now because of her, what we presume is ciguatera poisoning.
Right, and have you found anything that's helpful for that?
Sure, we treat them just like whatever, all the SIRS protocols, everything that we would do for SIRS. Her problem, you know, the problem with a lot of SIRS patients is they have that multiple chemical sensitivity, and you can't use anything. You can't use binders. You can't use, you know, you can't, there's so much that you can't use because they don't tolerate it. They get worse.
Top three things for that category, for that very sensitive, sick cohort of people, top three or four things you like.
BPC is great because they almost never react to it. TA1, they almost always will. We'll start them with something like SPM Active by Metagenics.
That's a sexy fish oil.
Yes, it's a, yep, that helps to resolve the inflammation in theory. And I probably will start them on okra, powdered okra, because they usually will tolerate the powdered okra.
So then that category, and so then I think kind of is a nice bookend to our conversation, because then if we go down that road, then we're going to talk for 6 more months. but then it's kind of interesting to think of. So here we are with a diversity of, you know, our the title of our talk was Enhancing the Entrepreneur, but then really the way that we know how to enhance the entrepreneur is by fixing the real serious problems of our day. And those, yes, and those neurological problems are in our chemical, metal, which we didn't talk about, but we will in the future, and toxin, you know, and then autoimmune and our body's reaction to it. And so then basically now we're in an evolving and exciting sort of journey of figuring out how to basically take those problems away and then rebuild the body and get it basically working functionally so that we can perform and do all the things we love to do.
Yes, that's right. And we just take that's a brilliant way to think about it, that we take all the knowledge we get from those very ill patients and apply it to our patients who are not so ill, but not optimal, including ourselves, and see if we can get them, if we can tweak and turn and just get that knob a little bit tighter.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, if you want to learn more from Suzanne, go to A4M, to the World Academy, and then come to the International Peptide Academy. And we're delighted to have you and your wealth of information. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you. It's great to be on. I appreciate your time today.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye, Matt.
Bye.